Good afternoon, everyone. I think we are good to start. We have just 1 hour. I'm Reza Rad, talking about ETL architecture for solving data warehouse challenges. Nice to have you all here, but it's really hard when your session is after lunch. Everyone is quite full. I'm sleeping right now myself as well. In the session, if you feel that you have any questions, just raise your hand, ask your questions. We can just address that question. If it is something that takes longer time, I will ask you to take that offline. We can have that discussion afterwards. A little bit about me. I'm Reza Rad, SQL Server MVP, author of some SQL Server BI books, leader of New Zealand BI user group. We do have a BI user group that runs each month in Auckland, usually in Microsoft office in Auckland in MPC room. Microsoft certified trainer and certified professional, and these are my contact information. So agenda, what we are talking about today. ETL architecture is actually quite wide thing. We cannot actually cover all ETL data warehouses challenges in an hour. So what we will cover in this hour is more about, first of all, challenge of slowly changing dimension, how we actually implement our ETL and design our ETL to cover slowly changing dimension, type 2 in this session. Inferred dimension member, how to deal with inferred dimension member, and how to use master data management to actually keep single version of truth. And if that happens, what will be our synchronization issues? And then what is our solution to solve that? OK, first of all, slowly changing dimension 101. Before I start that, how many of you worked with SSIS before? OK, that's quite a good number. How many of you worked with master data services before? That's fine. We will have actually 101 of master data services as well. And how many of you worked within an environment that you do have a data warehouse star schema type of things? Great. OK, so we have quite a professional audience here. A slowly changing dimension. What is a slowly changing dimension? Usually, a slowly changing dimension happens when you have a value of your attribute changed by time. For example, name might change. For example, let's say city of a customer might change. Sometimes you want to keep historical information of that change. For example, city of a customer. For example, I've been a customer for Countdown. I've been counted as customer for Countdown from Auckland. But when I moved to Christchurch, I should be counted as Christchurch customer. So we should keep those historical. But if my name changed, that might not be that much important for Countdown. So this depends on the change. You might actually apply different behaviors on your dimensions. So who knows what types of slowly changing dimension we have? OK. Can you please explain one or two? Yep. Yeah, that's right, yep. And three, you just choose, say, you might pick the last byte. Yeah, exactly. So that's exactly true. So type one is actually, there are seven types of that, but we are just talking about these most common type of slowly changing dimension. Type one is talking about update changes. For example, my name changed, so this should be updated. We usually don't want to keep historical, but there might be some cases that you want to keep historical of name. So in that case, for example, let's say we do have a customer, supplier. Supplier state is California, and it's changed to Illinois. So it's just a simple update in that case. Oops, my pointing is not that much good. So that's type one. Type two is talking about keeping historical information. So for keeping historical information, the best way to do that is having two columns, start date and end date, or from date to date type of thing. So when, for example, you insert, When you insert a record, it has a start date. When a change happens, you put an end date on that record. You will create another record on that with same start date, and the end date can be null or it can be a far end date. 8 year 3999, something like that. Anyway, so that's that. For keeping this, you should be actually keeping your business key or alternate key, and you should use a surrogate key. So that's quite important to use. So one of the best practices of data warehouse design is to have surrogate key. I've seen some data warehouses that doesn't have surrogate key. So don't take that personal, but there are some. So type 3 is preserve limited history. So in that case, we have type 1, but it's combined of type 1 and type 2. We do have historical information, but those historical information is limited. We do not keep all of them. So we keep, for example, 5 version of change, 2 versions of change with this structure. So what we are talking about this in this session is type 2, which is one of the most common. So ETL strategy of a slowly changing dimension type 2 is usually to detect changes, update existing to date, and create or insert a new record with from date, and the to date can be null or that far and default one. At the time of loading fact, you should check, is your date between the from date and to date? And if it is, then pick that surrogate key and use that in your dimension. So again, I mentioned that surrogate key of dimensions should be used into the fact table. So this is the flow of load dimension. When you load dimension, you should actually first look up changes. Look up existence when you query data from source. If it does not exist, so that's fine. You create a new dimension member. If it does exist, you detect for changes. If there is no change, that's fine. You don't need to worry about that. If a change happened, then you update existing dimension member to date. That means you actually keep those historical. And then you will insert a new dimension member with from date with that changed attribute value. Any questions so far? All good? At the time of loading fact, you query data from the source and look up into the dimension. There are two different ways of looking up into the dimension. Sometimes you might look up into the dimension and you say that, OK, I want my transaction date to be between from date and to date in my dimension. Sometimes you might say that, OK, I want the latest or the most current record in the dimension, which says, for example, select star from the customer when, for example, to date is null. That second way is useful when you actually update your data every scheduled basis. You don't want to actually get data, historical data for your fact table from 3 years ago, that kind of things. Any questions? All good? So I would show you the first demo. So in terms of demo, I do have an environment here. We do have a source database. This source database contains just a couple of tables. One is customer table. The other one is sales table. So customer table is the source for our customer dimension. Sales table is actually our sales transactional information. And we do have a data warehouse here. That data warehouse is actually exactly similar as AdventureWorks, if you worked before. I just want to load those data into DIM customer in terms of dimension and the fact record to be loaded into fact internet sales. So before that, I just truncate my data. And I start with dimension load. So in terms of dimension load, we do have a data flow task here. That data flow task contains an OLEDB source. This source get data from that customer table. We check for the new record. Is it a new record or is it existing? How we do that check? We just use a lookup transformation. How many of you used lookup? Good. So lookup transformation is to check against the reference table. Your reference table is them customer. We want to check our upcoming record with them customer to see if this is exist there or not. So this is my query that I write here. Let me just magnify that a little bit. So this query says that select star from the customer where to date is null. That means that give me the most current record of that customer. When we have that in the column actually set, we just check against customer alternate key, or we can call this business key. So we check customer alternate key to be matched with existing dim customer alternate key, and we pick that customer key. If it is exist, we call that existing customer key. Is there any questions so far? All good? So when that happens, we might find match records, we might find not match records. If it is matched, that means that the record exists in the dimension. So what we do, we check for changes then. So for check for changes, again, we do use a lookup component. We do say redirect rows to no match output if it is any. That means that we want match or not match both. In connection, again, I check against that them customer where to date is null. And here, I check all my values that I want to be applied as slowly changing dimension type 2. For example, I want to check what values changed. So dim customer is quite big dimension. If I want to apply, if I want to check for everything, that would be quite a big mapping set here. For this example, I just keep that simple. So I just check that against English education. So here you see that, okay, that's quite big. So here you see that I check English education and customer alternate key. So I find exactly same customer in the dimension, and I say, okay, is this English education matched with that English education in the current record or not? So that means if I have match record, then there's no change. If it does not match, then the record exists, but it changed. Okay? So if it is match, that means if record exists, and if it is not changed, I don't care. If it is exist and changed, I update existing to-date record. How many of you worked with OLEDB command transformation? Okay, good. Can someone please tell me what is doing OLEDB transformation? Nobody? Yes? Yep. Yep, exactly. So this is a data flow transformation that works row by row. So every row that will be transferred to this OLEDB command can actually run a SQL command on the back end. This SQL command can be calling a stored procedure or update or insert or whatever you write in that SQL command, and that will actually execute that command. So here we use that OLEDB command to get that record, connect to data warehouse, and run this command. So what this command says is that actually update dim customer to date, to get date. That means that we will set to date to the current date because this record is now obsolete. We want to create a new record. And the customer, where the customer key is equal to question mark. Question mark is a kind of standard for OLEDB connections. So if you use execute SQL task, for example, when you want to assign a parameter to your execute SQL task, you actually use a question mark, and then you map your input parameter to that. So we use that question mark here. and we mapped the parameter here in column mapping. So that existing customer key will be mapped to this parameter, and that means that we want to update this existing customer to date value. Right? All good? OK, what happens when we done that? What is the next step? Yep, exactly. So we make that previous record obsolete. We have to create a new record. So how we do create a new record, we actually just use an OLTP destination for this, because our destination is SQL Server, OLTP destination. But for that, we have to create a from date as well. So for that reason, I've created a derived column. Derived column is a way that you can actually write expressions and use those expressions to define new columns. So getDate is my expression, and I define that as a new column, which is fromDate. So that record then will be inserted into this. Then what is this union all? So I have to create that new record either if my new record does not exist in the destination, or if my new record exists and it had a change. Okay? All good? So that's how we do slowly changing dimension type 2. This is one of the ways of doing that. There are different ways of doing that. You can do all of these in T-SQL. You can use slowly changing dimension component, which I don't recommend. You can use T-SQL would be better, but and this actually would be one of the good ways of doing that, because you will actually log every record that goes through that. So I'll run this now to see how this works. Our source has 1,001 records. All of them already are new, so all of them will be transferred into this way. And then all of them will be actually inserted into the destination. So if I check my dem customer, now I have all of those records here. And I do have a from date as well, which filled in. I will talk about that inferred and MDS key afterwards. To date is null. This is my standard. You might want to set a var and to date as a default. And we do have our customer key, which is a surrogate key, auto increment type of value, and customer alternate key, which is our business key coming from our source system. Okay, all good. If I run this package again, we will process again those records, but this time, these will go through detecting changes. So records come in. These are not new. These are records that are exist. So I see that here. These are coming for checking for changes, but there's no change. So this don't go after that. If there was a change, we will catch that and do the rest of the work. Is that all good so far? Any questions? Yes, sir? Why we are not using a slowly changing dimension component, you mean? Question is that why we are not using a slowly changing dimension component. There is a slowly changing dimension component in SSIS, which actually doing all of these things for you. There is only a problem with that. Who knows what's the problem? Yes? Yes. So that doesn't have a good performance, actually. The problem is that if, for example, you have a dimension with, let's say, 200,000 records, then this might not be a good option. This will take a long process to load those information into that. There is an alternative for that, and that's actually a component that is built in CodePlex. I'm not sure if you are familiar with that, but that component actually called as, I think, Kimball. Yeah, Kimball SCD, something like that. Let me just search for that. So I would recommend using that because that has much better performance. That's developed by one of SQL Server MVPs in Canada. So SSIS Dimension Merge. That's the recent name of that, not this. This one. So I would recommend using this. Rather than that, this supports more than because the default one just support type 1, type 2, and type 0. This one supports till type 6, and this is much better in terms of performance. I always recommend using your own method, something like developing everything by your own. But if you insist to want, for example, using a built-in component to speed up your process, I don't recommend using this. I do recommend using that component, which was in CodePlex. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
How did you do this? If you just write all the scripts, is it just a lot easier?
T-SQL script, you mean?
Yes,
that's fine. The only problem with T-SQL scripts, and that this is not a problem, I mean, in terms of logging purpose. If I do that in this way, I can put some data tabs here and get actually how many records goes through this way, how many records goes through that way. If I want to do that in T-SQL, still I can do that, but then I have to write actually quite big number of T-SQL codes. If you are if you and your development team are quite professional in writing T-SQL, that's the way it is. You can do that there. Yeah. Yes. Oh, in terms of graphical interfaces, this is like a code. For example, this can work like a C# VB.NET code file. So you can check these into the source safe, check out, and do the changes. But the only things regarding that is that, for example, you cannot right-click on this and say, OK, give me the previous version of that. You can work with the whole file, not with a specific part of it. You're welcome. OK, so I go to my fact load. So in terms of loading the fact, it's quite simple. So what we do is just the data flow task with a source, or source is querying a sales table from SourceDB. And if I show that to you, you see that there is a customer alternate key column here. So what we do is that we look up for that customer key in customer dimension, and when we found that, we actually use that surrogate key. So I just use a lookup, and in that lookup, I check everything against my data warehouse. Again, as said previously, that this can be written in two different ways. One way is select star from my dem customer, where actually this current transaction date is between from date and to date, or where to date is null. When you have actually all historical data in your data warehouse, you want to integrate, you actually done the integration part, this can be quite easier and faster to implement. For making this example simple, I use this way. And then we just check column mappings. So in column mappings, I just check, is that customer alternate key exist or not? If it does exist, pick customer key from them customer. And finally, if it is match, then load that result set into the fact internet sales and use that picked customer key from dim customer. Any questions? OK, I just run this to show you how it works. And when I run this, I want you to tell me what is the problem with it. So I run this. You see that this was successful. I just magnify this. So we had that many records that loaded in, and out of that, we had 6,000 records loaded into that. That means that our dimension had only part of that data that comes through source system. So that's actually go into or next set of slide. So what is the problem with this? Unknown members, right. So that's what we are dealing with later. Any questions regarding that? Yes, sir?
I have a question. If I want to measure day that we treat f on day,
yes.
Can I actually do it within the lockpass function?
You can do that with OLEDB command if you want to do that. Lookup can do that as well, but I would recommend OLEDB command because you will get your, let's say, transaction date, and you want to run a query that says my transaction date, my input parameter is between this to date and this from date and that to date. So using an OLEDB command will be much better in that case. Yeah, you're welcome. So that's that. I go to the next set of slides. So next part is about inferred dimension member. So what is inferred dimension member? Who knows? Yes,
sir?
Yeah, that's actually what we found right now. So in that case, in previous example, when we get the data source query, this is load fact table. Look up the dimension. If it is exists, we just insert that fact record. If it does not exist, what happens then? What is your recommendation? Okay, that's the best. I just say what might be an option. So one option is using null. What is the problem with null? We usually don't use nulls in fact tables. That's not a good practice. Another solution is using -1, not available, not applicable, not something. That might be good, but the problem with that is that then or we actually lose our business key. This transaction might arrive just once in our source query, and we might lose that information in next ETL run. So it would be best to keep that business key. So what we do is what actually that gentleman said. So what we do is that we will create a new record in our dimension table. So that's a new record in our dimension table. This record has three main values in this. One is alternate key or business key. The other one is from date. The last one is inferred. So is inferred is a flag that says that this record is inferred. We call this record as an inferred dimension member. This is the definition of that. So all other values can be null, can be default values. For example, if it is integer, it can be -1, 0. This depends on your business, your standards. And with this implementation, we will actually produce a customer key. So when we produce that customer key, when we load the fact table, we actually use that customer key in our fact table, and we actually store those information. So that's quite important, because we loaded our fact table quite good, and we do have those information. We didn't lose anything. And that's just a matter of having values in our dimension. So those values will be added incrementally. I mean, for example, this dimension record can come through source of our dimension later with proper first name, last name of the customer, and those information. And then we will update that. Any questions?
So
yes.
So you don't have the information of the dimension, but you have to
Yes.
Information on that particular dimension.
Yes. Yes, actually that's one thing regarding master data management. If we have a master data management in place, and if we have a reference data, and if this scenario happens, that means our reference data or master data is not up to date. That should be written into that, and that should be up to date, okay? If this is a relational database, that might be the case. But sometimes consider, for example, you get some part of your data from Excel file, for example. So you are getting data from your Excel file, and you do have another, let's say, CSV file for your customers. That is your source of information. So that CSV file doesn't have this customer information. That's quite out of date. This might be updated a little bit later. That's right. This is data sync issue, that kind of things. But we want to keep that transaction information anyway.
What is the value of getting the dimension that doesn't exist?
What
is the business value? You create the data warehouse in order to analyze the patterns.
Yeah. Yep.
And you slice and dice based on dimensions.
Yes.
And if the dimension is not correct, what are you going to infer from that information?
That's actually two different things. One is if this data is not correct. The other one is if this data is not up to date. If data is not correct, if that's a data quality issue, that's fine. So we should actually check that data quality before doing this ETL. At the time of doing that ETL, we might have a data steward to do that. There is actually a data quality session in Friday, which talk about all that sort of thing, which is quite a good session. So that's about that. But this is not about data quality issue. This is saying that if we fix those data quality issues, we know that this is not a data quality issue, but this is a real case that's coming through, and we don't have that data synced. So in that case, we want those information. Because if we don't get that information, then this sales amount will be lost. We don't know where this amount goes. Or grand total will not match, for example. So that kind of thing. Because we don't have this dimension yet. This dimension might come tomorrow, but we don't have that yet. So our grand total will not match. So these kind of things that add values to this solution. Right, that's right. But consider that this record, this value of this record comes only once in our ETL. Tomorrow we won't have this. There are some, again, methods of doing that. Staging data, putting in interim tables. There are some methods of doing that. But this method is a kind of best practice to doing that. We can talk about that later offline if you would like. But yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's actually I'm talking about later, exactly, yes. Yes? Yep. Yeah. Yeah, to match those grand total type of things. So these are kind of actually real examples that happens. But we will talk about that for sure later. So that's how we do that. So one thing about this, actually the tricky part about this, is that when actually update happens. So we created that inferred dimension member, but that dimension member will be updated, actually will come through source of our dimension a day later, a week later. What would happen that in that time? So we actually have our dimension record. We will have some values that is coming for that. So we will have first name, last name, city. So what we do is that we will update. Even considering that we do have a slowly changing dimension type 2, we should update this record. We shouldn't obsolete this record and create a new one. Because this record has nothing to actually make it obsolete. So in this case, if we have inferred dimension, and even if we have slowly changing dimension type 2, we should update that record. So this is what happens in that case. And we just say that, OK, this is not inferred anymore. It was inferred before. When we did the update, the first update happened. So this is not inferred now. Any questions?
When you tell a customer, the consumer may use it first.
You mean when we tell customer? Okay. Oh, this is inferred. Actually, this is just in for purpose of your metadata for your ETL. So we don't, for example, show this in the cube or in the report. We use that dimension member, but that will be shown as, let's say, unknown type of things. But unknown with that business key, with that alternate key. So end user actually won't feel that difference, but in the data warehouse in the back end, we will feel that. We know that this is not unknown. This is something that we know, but we just don't have first name, last name, city, that kind of thing. Okay, so any questions? So what we do in this case, when we do a load of dimension, we do have different process for that. So again, we look up for existence. If it is exist, we check for changes. If it is changed, this time we check if this dimension record is inferred or not. We do have that is inferred flag now, so we can use that. So if it is inferred, I just update that dimension member and I reset that inferred flag. So that means that this is not inferred. If it is not inferred, I follow the same direction that we had previously. Okay? Any questions for that? At the time of loading fact, so if it is not exist, if this dimension record not exists, we create that dimension beforehand. That means creating that inferred dimension member. If it is exist, we just use the lookup, we get the surrogate key, and we load that into the destination. So next demo is how to change our solution to have inferred dimension member. So this is, again, dimension load. This time I added a conditional split here. So this conditional split, after we say that there was a change, and that change we don't know is it inferred or not, we just use a conditional split. What is conditional split doing? Anyone use conditional split?
It redirects rows based on the condition.
Yes, exactly. So that's redirect rows based on the expression that we wrote, the condition that we wrote in expression. So we say that if it is inferred, then create a new output. If it is not inferred, then give me the default output. So default output means that it is not inferred, and that goes through the same path that we had before. If it is inferred, we use another OLEDP command that writes actually this statement. So this says that update them customer, set first name, last name, whatever that we want, all actually columns, attribute values that we want, set all of them, and also set is inferred to be zero, where actually customer key is equal to my existing value. When I do that, I just set column mapping here. I do recommend you guys to use stored procedure here, because if you call an stored procedure, you will see actually the proper name of your variables. In this way, when you write your update command here, your variable names will be param01, which is really very likely to make mistakes. So in that case, use stored procedure. So I map my parameter values with these values, and then this is how to handle inferred dimension member. So that's the dimension. In terms of fact load, I do that in two different data flows. First data flow is to check is it inferred, if we have any inferred record or not. So if we have an inferred record, I will get that. So I get all customer alternate key from the sales table. Who knows why I used group by here?
Performance.
Performance, one. What else? Pardon? Distinct. That's the main reason. Performance is kind of best practice. Distinct is the correct reason for that. Because I want to use that then in the lookup. And I want to check that against my existing customer dimension. If I don't distinct that, this will be, for example, 10 of this customer. I will check that. It does not exist. Lookup, by default, use full cache method. Full cache means that this is disconnected from the database. When I load that, this will be in the cache. I check that. This does not exist. I will insert that. Next record comes. Check that. This does not exist. But this is not right, because it does exist. So because of that, I will do the distinct. So I will do the distinct. And in the lookup, I just check against my customer, if it does exist there, based on customer alternate key, create a new inferred dimension member, and I set the value of is inferred to 1 and from date. And I load that into the dim customer. So that means that before loading fact records, I will find all records that doesn't have a record, a matching record in customer dimension. I will create a new inferred member for any of them. And then I will load the fact table. So the next step is the same step that you've seen before. Any questions here? Yes, sir?
It's the rule by which you need to remove the distinct as
well. Yes. Yeah. I just used group by, but you can use distinct. Yeah. So I run this time. Before running that, I just truncate my fact table. So when I run this here, you see that I have 80,000 records coming from my source, and from that, 17,000 of that was not exist in our dimension. My dimension actually was quite a small, narrow piece of data, so that's why we do have that much, actually, inferred dimension. You don't usually have that much inferred dimension, but this is how it works. And when we populate the fact table, you see that all records actually populated now. But when I populated those records actually looks pretty empty. So if I go to my, sorry, not fact table, to my dimension. So these records that you see here are actually those inferred records. And you see that these are set as inferred. These has from date. And this has customer alternate key. So that's how I created inferred dimension record. Any questions? All good? OK, so now we want to add an extra piece to this architecture, and that's master data services. Who knows what is master data services? Yes? Could you please explain? Yep.
And it's maintained as a single source of truth.
Yep,
exactly.
Yeah, that's right. So this is kind of a central repository that we keep all our reference data or master data in a single place, and other systems can be subscriber of that. Consider that you are in this kind of environment. You do have different systems, CRM, let's say. You do have an online website. Your company has a recommendation system, retail sales system. All of these has part of customer information. So every piece of these data has part of customer dimension. But in a actually proper solution, you should have a master data in place that has a copy of your customer dimension. That should be a single version of truth. So that should be the most current updated version of your customer record, customer entity, and all other systems should be subscriber of that. So if they want to, for example, get customer data, they should get that from here. If they want to update these, they should actually update their changes into this one. So that's what master data services do. Master data services is part of SQL Server that comes from SQL Server 2008 R2, and it's available in 2012 and 14 as well. Any questions so far? That's some master data services capabilities. I don't want to talk about all of these. What I'm concerned here is that master data services has its own database. That's a SQL Server database. And it has two UIs. One is web UI, another is Excel add-in. So you can connect to master data services with these two different UIs. So usually you do have a data steward, someone from business, who understand what is the data, who understand that, for example, this rule should be set on your data, this should not be. So that data steward can work with these, actually, tools. So in our scenario, we want to keep our customer information here in master data services as the single version of truth. That doesn't mean that customer dimension is here, and we don't need that in data warehouse. Data warehouse is for reporting purpose, for analysis purpose. We want to keep that. That keeps historical information as well. Master data services is a place that we store our master data information. That shows us the most current values, but it has tracking information as well. So when we have master data services in place, so we should have our ETL scenario that get data from master data services. Instead of getting data from a source DB, we get from MDS server. So in that case, what we will do is that using subscription views. Master data services has a structure that called as subscription views. Those subscription views means actual views in the database. So those views can be used to fetch actually data from master data services. I'll show you how those works. Any questions so far? Okay, so this is the master data services web interface. Oh. It's changed resolution, but can you see this? Is it readable? Okay, that's fine because we don't have that much time to fix that, I think. Okay, so that's Master Data Services Web UI. So it has different options. What I have here is that I have different models. In each model, I can define multiple entities. For example, I do have a model here that I defined a customer entity. So these records are actually customer records. For example, this is a customer that I can see values here. So I loaded all customer information here. So that's my single version of truth for the customer. Now I want to use this as the source instead of using that source DB as a source for customer. So what I do is that I would create a subscription view for that. Master Data Services is a database in SQL Server that I will show you here. This database has quite complex structure. As you see, there are a lot of coded tables, and for each entity that you create, some tables will be created. So this is recommended that you do not use the actual tables here. Do not try to query the actual tables here. But there is a way for getting data from that. That way is through integration management and creating subscription view on top of your entities. So what I did here is that I've created a subscription view on top of customer that will create an actual view in the database for that customer. So this is my customer view, which I just say that, okay, from this model, give me from this entity, give me all members. So that means after doing that, There is a view here called MDM customers. MDM is a schema. And if I select data from that, that will show me all information of that customer. You see that? And there are some, actually, metadata columns as well, which relates to master data services, GUID, version name, that sort of thing. Any questions so far? Yes, sir. That's fine. Yep. Regarding master data services, that's work with SQL Server backend database, so there is not that much limitation. Everything works fine. But there is an Excel add-in for your master data services. So I'm connected again to the same entity through Excel. So Excel has some limitation. You know, for example, when you load that much amount of records, Excel might be quite slow. So if you do have quite big number of records, that's fine, keeping those in master data services, but your Excel add-in might not work properly. So you might use your web add-in, usually, in that case. OK, so when I want to get that, get data from master data services, what I do is I just go to my dimension load. Instead of getting data from SourceDB, I get data from MDS database and from that customer table. So that's all happening. That's actually what we load, and that's all. So I get data from master data services in this way. Any questions? All good? OK, so what happens when we have this solution in place? One problem that has that actually happens in this solution is that we have our inferred dimension member implemented. So when a new record from fact source coming and we don't have that dimension exist, we create that record into our data warehouse. We call that as an inferred dimension member. But is that inferred dimension member exist in MDS? It does not. In the current state, it is not. So that means that our master data services and our data warehouse is not equal to each other. Our master data services is not a single version of TrueSTEN. So what we have to do is to keep our MDS as a single version of Truth. So we actually have to write back information. I can show you a sample how that problem might happen. So what I do here is to truncate. Sorry, it's too many records, too many windows. So I truncate my tables, and I insert a record that will be a. So I truncated my tables, and I insert a inferred a record in source of fact table that can cause an inferred dimension member. And here I load that dimension from master data services this time. So our master data services customer entity has 18,000 records. All of them are new. So all of them loaded into the data warehouse. Then we load the fact table. When I load the fact table, again, there are two processes. First process is check for inferred. We do have still one inferred record that is not in master data services. And when we load that, that's actually fine. So we covered that. Our data warehouse dimension does have that inferred dimension member because we catched that. But the problem is that when our data steward goes into Excel or goes to actually master data services, he cannot find this record there because we didn't update it MDS. So that means that I should write data back into MDS. So for the solution here, what we say is that it's quite important that write back your data into the master data services. And when you write back your data into the master data services, when inferred dimension member happens, you should flag that as inferred because of your ETL scenarios. So loading data into master data services can be done within a structure that called entity-based staging. Who knows what is entity-based staging? Yes? Can you please explain? Yeah, that's exactly what actually John explained. So entity-based staging means that there is a staging per each entity in master data services. We load data into our staging table. We use two actually values, batch tag, import type. These are quite important when we load data into and our entity attribute values. And then we run a batch. That batch run happens actually through executing a stored procedure. And when that happens, data will be loaded into the master data services. That's called as entity-based staging structure. In MDS version 2008 R2, that was quite different. This is working from 2012 and 14. So these are different import types that we work with when we want to load data into MDS. For this sample, we just keep this easy. So type 0 means that load that data into MDS. If it exists, update this. If it does not exist, create it. There are different types. 6, for example, removes. 1, just add. So these kind of things. So our fact load this time will be like this. So when we found there is an inferred dimension member, before loading that into the data warehouse, first of all, we load that into the master data services. We run that batch, we create that master data record, and then we create that record into data warehouse. We might want to use MDS key or MDS code for keeping some metadata information as well. And finally, we insert that into the fact record. If it exists, that's just simple insert into the record. At the time of dimension load, that's again same structure. The only difference is that green box there, that if we found that this is inferred and it is changed before setting that is inferred to 0, I mean before resetting that flag, we do that in master data services and then we do that in data warehouse. I'll show you how this works in SSIS package. Any questions on this? It's quite seems complex, but I just added two other components in SSIS to cover that. Yep. That's then requires some, for example, if you have a dimension in your data warehouse that consists of 3, let's say, entities in your master data services, then when you are actually creating that inferred dimension member, this actually relates to your business. For example, that inferred dimension member only relates to that specific entity, not these 2 entities. So you create that record there, and then you have a join query that get data from all of these, and then load that into the destination. So that's quite case specific. But if that happens, that's something that you need to develop something for that, implement. OK, so I go back to this, and I just show this how it works first, and then I explain what I've done. So I do have a dimension here, and my fact table is there as well. So before loading that, I load my dimension from MDS first. So that's load all of my dimension. That's what we've seen before. So that's load 18,000 records in my dimension. When I load my fact table, I want to insert a record that calls actually inferred dimension members. So here is my fact table load. So I execute my package, and that will detect a record that calls inferred dimension member. We will catch that record. We will insert that record into the master data services. I can show you how that actually inserted. If I go to Explorer of that customer entity that I have here, so you see that this record is actually the record that was inferred. So it's created automatically by SSIS packages, and you see that this is flagged as inferred. So what happens here is that I'm a data steward here. So I'm coming and I see that, okay, this record doesn't have any values. I know that this is for this person, or I might get this automatically. But let's say, for example, this is manually, and I enter information here. I leave all other stuff as is, and I say, okay. So when I insert this information, you see that this record is still inferred, but it has some information here. Next ETL run actually will pick those changes in dimension load. So what happens if I execute this package again? So again, all 80,000 records comes in. We will check for changes. Only one record changed. That record was as inferred record. So what we've done is that we just found that we updated that record into the data warehouse, and we reset that flag in master data services. So in data warehouse right now, I see that record. So this is that record, and it has those information. And it doesn't have to date because it is not obsolete. It was as inferred, and it is not inferred anymore. If I go to master data services, here is my record. And this time, it is not inferred. So it's automatically happened. If, as a data steward, I come back again, and I change this value again, and if ETL run happens next time, what we expect to do? What actually happens in the data warehouse? Yep, exactly. So we expect an insert, a slowly changing dimension this time. So I execute the package this time for dimension load, and you see that that record changed. This is not inferred anymore, so we want to insert that record into the destination. So if I check my data warehouse, I have two records this time. First one is the one that is already obsolete, and it was with bachelor, previous value. The new record has the new value, and it is not obsolete. It's the current one. So this is actually how we implemented that. If we have all inferred dimension and slowly changing dimension type 2, all those sort of things. So what happened here is that I've just added two steps. One for fact load, I just did the load into the master data services. I used this expression task to build a batch tag. Batch tag is a string that we run the batch and we load that data into the master data services. I executed that and load that into the master data services, and then I used that in the data warehouse. The next part in the dimension load, I again did the same stuff. So I created the batch tag and executed after the data flow. When I found an inferred updated, I just inserted that into the staging table. So all of these actually together build that strategy, and this will load the data as we want to. Any questions? Yes, sir? You mean in You mean here? Oh, in MDS, we actually don't have type 2 change. MDS will keep only the latest state of that record. So that means this is the latest state of that record. We do have historical if we want to. For example, if I right-click here, sorry, not right-click, if I say view transaction, this says to me that it was bachelor and changed to PhD. But this is not like a data warehouse that I have start date and to date. So for MDS, we want just the most current one. We can get historical in this way that I showed you, but not slowly changing dimension type 2.
So we cannot query the subscription view from MDS saying I want to look at the history of...
Subscription view will only give you the most current values of the record, but if you want to get those tracking information, you can write a query to do that, but subscription will just give you that most current one. So I just finished that before you head off. It's take a little bit longer. Sorry about that. So the benefits of this solution was that we have a slowly changing dimension type 2. We have inferred dimension. We have master data management in place. So all of these together. And that is some references to study more. Data Warehouse Toolkit of Kimball. That's a quite good book. SSIS book, SSIS tutorials. These slides are available in TechEd website that you can have access to it. These are my contact information, and these are basic slides for TechEd. I don't talk about that. If you have any questions, you can just come to me and ask. Sorry, I rushed because I think next speaker is waiting for me to finish. Thank you for attending, and please evaluation, field evaluation. Thank you.